Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
We're in Roswell, and of course we have resident Dennis Balthizer. You have been here, what, 10 years?
Yes, 96. I moved up here.
I'm keeping up with you.
You sure are. So are other people.
Well, we've done some shows about that in the past. But you're going back to Stillwater regardless of that.
That's right. That's right.
You look good today. Very, very spiffy.
Well, thank you. It's a good time of the year to celebrate our freedom.
That's right. It's the 4th of July.
We can do this today because we have that freedom, you know.
That's right. I want to talk to you about a place that I want to ask you about the freedom up there. You just came back from Area 51.
I did.
What was your impression?
Well, I've been
I saw some interesting pictures on the website, by the way.
I've been studying Area 51 as one of the four areas of research I do, along with the Roswell incident, underground bases, and the Great Pyramids of Egypt and Giza. But to go to Area 51, when you say you went to Area 51, you really didn't. You went to the entrance to Area 51 because that's as far as you're going to go.
Yeah, now one of those pictures, that actually looked like a regular gate. And a regular road going in there.
There's two entrances. There's a main entrance which runs off the extraterrestrial highway between Ash Springs and Rachel, Nevada, that was renamed the extraterrestrial highway.
Yes.
It's 375. That was named that by the governor a couple of years ago. And off of that road is a straight line, dirt road, well-maintained, that runs about 11 miles back to the mountain range. There are no signs to indicate there's anything back that road. And when you go down that road, about 13 miles, you run into some signs that are warning signs, including one sign that says the use of deadly force is authorized. And my wife and I were driving down that road, and I told her at about 10 miles, I said, start watching the hills because you'll probably see a Jeep or a gray pickup come up over one of these hills, and that'll be the guards checking on us. Well, much to my surprise, we came around the corner and we saw the signs, and when we looked up in the hill, there was a gray pickup parked up there, two guys in it with camouflage uniforms on, both of them with binoculars facing our direction. So they knew we were on our way before we knew that they would be there. And what happens is they have sensors in the road, and the guardhouse is located about a quarter mile behind the signs. There's no gates, by the way, at the main entrance, just the signs. But once they are notified by these sensors that there's someone on the road, they have time to get out of the guardhouse, get in the truck, and get up in the hill and wait for you.
And at one time, I think they used Jeep Cherokees, but it's pickups now. Huh?
No, they still have them. We found them, too.
Okay.
And what's interesting, they have U.S. government plates on the vehicles, and the first two digits on the license plates are the year of the vehicle. So most of the Jeeps, most of the white Grand Cherokees are 95 models, while the gray Ford and Chevy four-wheel drive pickups are 2000, 2002 models. They're newer models. But at the main gate, they say main gate, there are no gates. It's just these signs. And then if you look up on the hills, you'll see cameras that are solar-powered cameras where they keep tabs on you. They also have listening devices where they can hear every word you're saying while you're there. So having studied this and seen pictures for years, it was kind of ironic to be standing there at the signs and knowing that they're sitting up there looking at me with binoculars.
Well, did they come down and meet you?
No. In fact, they are instructed not to interfere with the public. Well, they don't have to. If you cross the line, you belong to them. And what they normally do is they will turn you over to the local sheriff. The local sheriff will interrogate you. The signs have two warnings on them. One is a fine of $600 and 6 months in prison, and the other one is a $1,000 fine and a year in prison, or both. And those are both federal security regulations of the United States government. I just wrote an editorial, which is on my website, on your website.
Yes, it is.
20 other websites and UFO magazines. And in there, I made a statement that Area 51 has been in existence since 1955. It was opened by the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, to test the U-2 aircraft. In that time, since 1955, to my knowledge, no one has breached the security of Area 51. But we cannot control the United States border. My question is, do we need a sign on the border saying the use of deadly force is authorized?
Have we ever heard of anybody that just didn't pay attention to the signs and went on in?
Yeah, there have been a few that have crossed the line for some dumb reason, and they have been interrogated, they have been fined, and they will know where you're at for the rest of your life.
They weren't close enough for you to tell if they were paramilitary or real military?
They're not. They're Whack and Hut. Whack and Hut is the security at Area 51. They call them camo dudes because they wear camouflage uniforms. There are no insignias, there are no names, no identification on the uniforms at all. And they have been in use for, I guess, as long as the base has been in existence. A few years ago, they tried to go on strike, and they were pretty well threatened that if you go on strike, you'll never have another job anywhere. So to me, it would have to be a boring job to be sitting out there in the middle of the desert unless somebody like I show up. You know, there's really not much to do but sit there and look at what little wildlife there is.
Dennis, it's empty out there, isn't it? I mean, there's not much going on.
There's absolutely nothing. Between Ash Springs and Rachel, there's a lot of nothing, you know.
Yeah, it makes Roswell look scenic.
Yeah.
And Roswell is a nice town. I'm talking about as you come into town. There's mm-hmm. not much here. Especially when you come in from where I live, Oklahoma and Texas.
Well, the town of Rachel, which is the only town in Tonopah, between Ash Springs and Tonopah, Nevada, is a little town of Rachel. There's about 85 people in their population. They have a Baptist church. They have a little bar and cafe known as the Alien Inn.
Which did you stop in there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we ate all our meals there for 3 days. And
Is Pat Travers still there?
No. Pat.
They now have some other lady running it.
Pat runs it, yeah. Her and her husband, Travis, ran it for the last several years.
He passed away.
He passed away, and Pat now runs it, and she's just wonderful. She's just a great lady and a joy to be with. And they barbecued every day for all the speakers, and we had big cookouts every day for every meal. The motel consists of house trailers that are two-bedroom with one bath that's shared. My wife appreciated that, having to share a bathroom with three guys. But we made it through that okay. When we checked in...
So in other words, they're kind of double-wise of a bathroom in the middle?
Right,
something?
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's the motel.
Okay.
And then when we checked in, my wife went in the room...
Is it expensive?
I don't know. They provided my expenses since I was a speaker.
Okay.
I wouldn't think so. But when my wife checked, we checked in and my wife went in a room, I went back out to the pickup to get something and I walked around the corner. There's a 4-foot gopher snake laying there. So I went in the Alien Inn and I said, I need some help out here. And some guy came out and it had crawled up inside of a pickup in the motor. And he reached in and grabbed me. He said, oh, yeah, he said he comes by here every so often.
Well, yeah, at night it still gets cold in the desert, even though it's hot.
What I did find interesting, Jerry, was not the main gate, but the back gate. And Chuck Clark lives there. Chuck has been on the government's list for several years, doing things that they think he shouldn't do. And he took us out to the back entrance. Now, at the back entrance, they have two double gates. They're swing-down gates. They have stop signs on them. There is a guard.
That's the picture I was talking about.
Yeah, there's a guardhouse.
Gates.
There is a guardhouse there. All the windows are blackened where you can't see in. There is a sensing device. There is a camera mounted on about a 30-foot-high tower. And I was walking along the fence along the border, and every time I moved, I'd look up, and the camera was following me. If I moved, the camera moved. If I moved, the camera moved. So they were watching me. And we were there for quite a while, and all of a sudden, from inside the base on the road, we saw dust. And pretty soon we saw a black spot on the road, and we got binoculars and looked, and sure enough, there was one of the white Jeeps. They had brought reinforcements in. He's sitting in the white Jeep with binoculars, looking at us, looking at him with binoculars. And after a little while, he came up to the guardhouse, and he opened both doors, his door and the passenger door, and took some kind of a bag out and tried to stay out of sight where we couldn't get a picture of him, which I did. And went in the guardhouse for a little bit, and when he came out, he was, instead of coming around and closing the passenger door, he got in the Jeep, backed the Jeep up, and hit the brakes trying to close the door. Well, the door didn't close, so he was upset, and he had to lean over and lay down in the seat and reach over and pull the door shut because he didn't want to be on camera anywhere. But it was quite an experience.
Did you make any contact with him, like, hello, how are you?
No. They've been given instructions not to harass people. I think just the fact that they're there is enough to defer anybody from wanting to go any further than the signs.
How difficult is it to get to this back gate?
It's not at all. In fact, you can get there from in Rachel. You take a dirt road off to towards the mountains and make one turn, and that takes you right up to the gate.
Could you see any facilities at all down
there? Yes, they have. There's some Russian radar that is used for some of the exercises they have. There were some big pieces of radar equipment off in the distance towards the hills that you could see. But that was all. They have exercises there two or three times a year, red flag, green flag, where they actually do dogfights and things like that. They have captured Russian MiG airplanes that we fly, and they do a lot of testing there. The latest problem that Chuck Clark has is they're testing and running the F-22 Raptor.
Tell me about that.
This is a new aircraft that has a capacity of about 1.8 Mach on speed. And Chuck is a big environmentalist, and does a lot of picture taking on native flowers and things like that. He found some petroglyphs in one of the mountains that are very, very rare. And he said by this Raptor running down, his F-22 running down the valley at better than double the speed of sound, it's blowing the petroglyphs off of the face on these mountains. So he said he's tempted to notify the Air Force that they can find some other place to do their playing if they want to, because he don't think that should be damaged. So we'll see what happens with that.
He's been there for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I think he's been there about 8 or 10 years. I've been working with him since 96. We've done a lot of research together, and he's got some excellent pictures. He gave me a disc with some pictures on it. One of them is a declassified picture showing 10 SR-71 Blackbirds sitting on a tarmac up at Area 51.
Not one, not five, but 10.
I didn't have any idea we had 10 of them.
And I didn't know that either.
One of them obviously is a trainer because it has a cockpit behind the cockpit. So it's made a little bit different than the others, but there's 10 SR-71 sitting there together.
Well,
Most of our aircraft, like I said, the base was opened by the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, in 1955 to test the U-2, and all aircraft that have been developed in secrecy since then have been test flown there. Not all aircraft, but all aircraft that were secret, like the A-10, the A-12, the stealth F-117 fighter, the B-1, the B-2. They've all been test flown there from time to time.
While you were there, what, 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see any aircraft?
Didn't see a thing because it was the Memorial Day weekend, and I think probably the base was fairly well shut down for the holiday, so we didn't see anything. The black mailbox that everybody has heard about that's on the rancher's property right next to the extraterrestrial highway.
Did you go by there?
Got pictures of that. That's now painted white.
No longer black.
And there's actually two mailboxes. One is the rancher, who has his name and box number on the mailbox, and the other one is a smaller box on the bottom, and it has a slot that looks like it would accept checks or maybe small letters, and it's got alien written across the bottom of that. So that's for alien mail, I guess.
So they're getting checks from home.
Yeah.
I wonder what the bank was drawn on. But anyway,
you know,
you'll never know.
Area 51 for me has been a catch-22 situation ever since I've started researching it, because, first of all, we need a place to test new aircraft, new technology, and we don't want to do that where our adversaries know what we're doing. The rumors are that there's 22 levels below ground at Area 51, and as many as 7 at Papoose Lake, adjacent to Area 51.
Yeah, we talked to you about that before. Did you see any evidence of this?
No.
It's
all back on the other side of the mountain where you wouldn't be able to visually see it from where we were.
When Groom Lake, that's on the reservation itself, I guess, or overlooking it, I guess, maybe.
Groom Lake is on the other side of the mountain. That's mm-hmm. part of the base. There are two runways there. One is 15,000 feet. The other is 30,000 feet. That's 6 miles of runway. That tells me that they are bringing something in at tremendous velocity, because you don't need a lot of runway for takeoffs. but for landing something, you need a lot of runway. And you could land two space shuttles from opposite directions that don't use brakes when they land, just a parachute. And you could land two from different directions, and they would be a mile apart when they stopped.
We'll be back to talk with Dennis Balthizer a little bit more on his trip to Area 51. And I know he ran across some interesting people there while he was speaking, and we'll talk to him about that. And he has some other projects we want to talk to him about as well. And we're in his hometown now of Roswell, New Mexico. I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away.
I'm Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda, the world's top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs. I'm here today to tell you one of the most fascinating stories I've come across in my career as a journalist. The secret of Reggate is that so many people in one small American community now know that there is so much more to the universe than what we see and experience in our everyday world.
Save $5 this month when you purchase the Secret of Reggate DVD from ShopJerryPippin.com. This film won the prestigious People's Choice Awards at the 2004 UFO Conference. The Secret of Reggate will astound you. You will want to see it again and again. Save $5. Order it now, this month only, at ShopJerryPippin.com. Secret of Reggate, a Linda Cowan production. Okay, here we are again with Dennis Balthizer. Before he gets off, I'm going to have to talk to him about the pyramids in Egypt, but we're a long ways from there right now. We're in Roswell, New Mexico, and we're talking about Area 51. A member in our audience, Dennis, during the commercial break, wanted to know about deliveries. And I was talking to Larry Dickin about that the other day. I said, you know, they have to truck things in. He says, no, I think they fly everything. And I said, I don't know. They must truck something in, like groceries. Any evidence of a road that can handle trucks?
Employees at Area 51 are brought in one of two ways. The local people, that are, or I say local, within several miles, I guess, of the base, go to the base daily in white buses that have the windows pretty well blacked out. Now, they have their own airport terminal at McLaren Airport in Las Vegas. And there, they are using old America West 737 airplanes that are painted completely white, no markings other than a identification number for the aircraft itself. There's no logo or anything like that. And I've also heard that those windows are painted black or blocked out. And I don't know if that's to keep people from seeing who's inside or if it's from keep people inside being able to see outside.
That's a good point. Could be either.
But Those flights, they're called Janet flights. They arrive and depart from Area 51 several times a day. There's been a lot of rumors over the years that they were either shutting down the base or moving it. We have knowledge where they have just built a brand new water tank to store water, and that may be necessary because probably the water that's there is contaminated by radiation. The other thing is that I think in most cases when you're doing secret work, if you're on a certain project and you finish that project, you can easily be transferred to another base, whether it be Edwards Air Force Base, whether it be Los Alamos or White Sands, whatever. I think probably overall there's probably 1,000 to 2,000 people at the base at any one given time. The most would probably be up around 4,000. But as far as it's shutting down, I don't believe that's going to happen. And if it does, I'm going to be very upset because I've been lied to since 1955 about it being there in the first place.
Yeah, you know, it would be a waste of money. They put a lot of operations.
Well, they built another. We thought at first it was a taxiway, but it looks like it may even be a small runway between the two other runways. And it's been picked up on some satellite pictures recently. It's got fresh asphalt, and you can tell that it's new. So it could be a short runway for smaller aircraft that they're using now instead of the long runways. What takes place there is anybody's guess. We know that they do test the new aircraft. Secret aircraft are tested there on a regular basis, but they do a lot of radioactive stuff. And they burn radioactive waste on top of the ground. No place else in the United States is that permitted. The Environmental Protection Agency does not allow it. However, the President of the United States, since Clinton, every year puts out a proclamation exempting Area 51 from the law. So they're above the law. I wrote an editorial on that. It's on my website that you can read about them doing this toxic waste burning. There have been two guys that have died of radiation exposure. Their wives went to court. They tried to sue. They were told you can't sue something that doesn't exist. In 1985, the Air Force went to Congress and bought an additional 8,000 acres of land. The reason for it was national security. That encountered two mountains where people would be able to go up and look into the base. You can no longer do that. The closest you can get to the base and see anything is 23 miles away. So it takes some pretty good equipment to be able to get any pictures of the base from that far away.
Did you run across anybody like in Rachel that works out of Area 51?
I didn't personally, but Chuck has. He's talked to several. In fact, there was four guys that have died of pretty rare cancer over the last few years, and nobody talks about it, he said. And with him living there, he respects the fact that they work there. So they don't, when they get together at the Alien Inn or wherever, they really don't talk about it because the guys can't talk about it, so he doesn't put them in a position where they would.
When we talk about radiation problems, this is out in the middle of nowhere. That's pretty tough to get treatment even.
Well, getting treatment?
Treatment for people like that are working at Liv and Rachel.
I would guess that they have pretty good facilities at the base itself for that. But one thing my wife noticed, and I didn't pay much attention to it, but while I was being awed by the guards and things like that, she was walking around and she said she never saw any insects of any kind. No flies, no bugs, no nothing. And I kidded with her and I said, well, that's because of the radiation. It's all been wiped out. But it really was a little odd when you think about it that she didn't see anything that would indicate there was any type of insects there. We saw one antelope driving into the main gate by itself, and that was the only living thing we saw.
When you were spotted, you stopped your car and turned around? Was that the
thing? Oh, no. When we pulled up to when we came around that corner and we saw the guards up on the hill with the binoculars on us, we just stopped, got out, got my camera, took a couple pictures of them, waved at them.
And, didn't they wave back?
No. No, they're very unsociable. But we stood there and we talked and we looked around and saw the cameras and all the security equipment they have. Chuck Clark had found a sensing device some time ago, I believe 15 miles outside of the boundary. And Chuck being what he is and how he is, he found it with a metal detector. And he went over, he picked it up, turned it upside down, and looked at it and wrote down the numbers on it, took pictures of it and stuff like that. Not too long after that, Chuck went on vacation. While he was on vacation, the FBI went into his trailer and took all his computer equipment and all his disks and things like that. He wound up going back down to Las Vegas and talked to the head of the FBI down there, and they really were going to try to charge him with being a terrorist. And he said, my only question, he said, I know what the law is. He said, I haven't broken the law, but he said, I want to know why you have a sensor 15 miles outside the border. And they said, here's your equipment. We'll see you later. They never told him why the sensors were there.
How about other people in Rachel besides Chuck? They all are aware of that. That's probably the reason most of these people live there. For one reason or another.
Some of them have work on ranches that are in the areas. There's a couple of them employed there at the Little Alien Inn. When you have 85 people as your total population, you know, it doesn't take much to spread the wealth around, really. But there's some that are retired, and they're all aware that the base is over there, and from time to time they have people that will drop in that have worked at the base.
Now, I called Pat one night when I was doing live radio about 2 o'clock in the morning to see what was happening at the Little Alien Inn, and she told me that she had seen an entity inside the bar.
Oh, that's Pat. She was in the bar, and she saw something.
No one else talked about that? Huh?
No. The Little Alien Inn is a tourist attraction. There's no doubt about that.
She would say that because we were on about 160 stations.
They have a wall with celebrities and different pictures of people. I'm going to get my picture put on the wall there.
Oh, well, good.
And they want to sell some of my tapes and stuff. But it's just a quaint little place to stop and visit. Good food and good fellowship when you go in there and see everybody.
Now when you were there, it was some sort of seminar?
Yeah, Ike Bishop sets up a Rachel UFO conference every year. And this is, I don't know, fifth, sixth, seventh year he's had it. And he contacted me last year and asked me if I would come out to be one of the speakers. And I knew I was going to lose money on the trip, as I do on most lectures I do. So my wife and I decided we'd just make a vacation out of it and went to Hoover Dam and Las Vegas and the Grand Canyon while we were on the same trip. And then we were in Rachel itself for 3 days, had a meet and greet on Friday night and dinner. And then I did a lecture on Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning. I did two lectures while I was there.
Well, you know, the one thing, the reason I brought that up is that the place has what we call in the business sex appeal,
mm-hmm.
because of the reputation.
Sure.
But it's so difficult to get there, you wonder how big of a crowd they really do get.
I think it's a lot like Roswell. You know, Roswell's out here in the middle of nowhere. But
it's bigger than Rachel.
Oh, yeah, a lot. by a lot.
But in fact, you have quite a few things there now.
The curiosity, I guess, of Area 51, people will want to go there, and it definitely is out of the way if you're gonna go to Rachel. You're going to want to go to Rachel, probably, because
there's nothing else there.
Nothing else there between Las Vegas and Nevada, Utah.
So you had a fairly good crowd. I imagine there were campers.
They had the lecture at the senior center, which could seat 60 people, and I think we probably had 55.
Had a full house.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah.
In fact, you had a full house here in Roswell yesterday.
I did, yeah.
What did you talk about yesterday?
I did the Roswell incident yesterday for the celebration this year, and I did my complete story of the Roswell incident then and now.
Is an interesting topic in itself. We talked to you a little bit about that before.
Yeah, I'm working two new cases right now, Jerry.
Will you tell me a little bit about those if you
can? One involves a location just west of town, which I had never heard about before, and we're doing a lot of checking. I found the ranch last week. I did some research and found the location of the ranch, and now we're trying to locate some of the names of the people that were supposedly involved. And then I also am working a case where I got the name of a guy who claims to have been one of the pilots that flew some of the stuff out of here. And he's still alive, and I'm going to get in touch with him sometime this coming week.
So you haven't made contact yet?
Not yet. No, I just got the information.
But he is alive. It's getting pretty small, that club of people surviving.
We've lost three first-hand witnesses. Of course, Walter Hart passed away. He was the public relations officer out at the base that wrote the article, "We Captured the Flying Saucer." D. Proctor was the kid who went out to the debris site with ranch foreman Mac Brazel. He passed away. And then James Bond Johnson passed away. James Bond Johnson was the guy that took the pictures in General Ramey's office. And when that came out on the Internet, I was trying to verify that he had actually passed away, and I was having a hard time verifying it, and finally I decided, well, I'll just write to him, and if he doesn't answer, I'll assume it's right, you know. And fortunately for me, his son wrote back to me and thanked me for writing, and decided to use a interview that I did with James Bond Johnson a few years ago at the memorial service. He handed that out at the memorial service, which was quite an honor for me to have him do that.
You talked to him personally, when he was alive. What was basically his story?
Johnson?
Yes.
He was the one that took the pictures in General Ramey's office when...
Was he stationed in Fort Worth, or was he here?
He worked for the... He was a newsman...
Oh, he worked for the newspaper, Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Right.
Right, okay,
right.
I remember.
And, in fact, was the only person available who had a camera at the time, and went out to General Ramey's office and took six pictures in General Ramey's office of General Ramey. Colonel DeBose, the adjutant of the 8th Air Force, and Major Marcel. And there was no doubt that he actually took them pictures, but later in life he seemed to embellish his story a little bit, and I questioned him a lot about that, because the big thing with Ramey was the piece of paper he was holding in his hand facing the camera that we have started to try to analyze and see what's on it, and we're pretty much in agreement that the words "victims of the wreck" or on that piece of paper that General Ramey's holding, which means it wasn't a weather balloon. And I don't know why he embellished his story a little bit, but just before he passed away, he had written to me and asked me if I'd change that, and I told him, no, I won't change it because that's what you said, but if you want to do another interview, I'll be happy to do that, and we never did get around to that.
He wanted to change it in what way?
I think he wanted to correct or try to correct what he has told me before.
Did he tell you before that the thing was upside down? And
basically, yeah, that he had probably he was probably wrong and that he assumed too much in what he had told me before. There's no doubt about it. He took the pictures. I'll never question that. But this is true with a lot of witnesses for Roswell. They have a reason for embellishing their story a little bit, and that really makes it difficult for us researchers to do our work.
We'll be back. We'll talk more about Roswell in a moment. I'm going to get back to Rachel in Area 51 before it's over, and a couple of other issues that Dennis has been covering as well, one of our favorite people. That website is Truth Seekers or Seeker at Roswell?
TruthSeeker@Roswell.com.
Okay.
All one word.
We'll be right back. I'm Jerry Pippin.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.